Jenny, here we are, back at the beginning again, having seen so much. I feel changed by what we've been through together and since we last recapped this episode.
We're not the same people we were.
No.
What, a couple of years ago?
So I'm interested to go through this episode again. This version of our recap will be spoilery. However, if you want a spoiler-free recap, our original recap, which is right down at the far end of our pod feed, was spoiler-free and has some really good stuff in it. I was pleasantly surprised when I went and perused it quickly before this, because I thought, our first ever recording, we didn't know each other. We were thrown by watching different versions of the same show. But it's a whole lot of fun in there.
No. Two professionals at the top of their field, best pals coming together, overcoming their differences and perhaps being strengthened because of them. She's American. She's British.
And
that's all I got. Those are our major differences.
Just describing stuff.
Yeah, and somehow we made it work, Helen.
Yeah. This is, of course, the bland white era of Veronica Mars. So if you do have any problems telling these rich white boys apart, Jenny, back in the day, made cards for you to help you identify them. Yeah, you can find those at vmipod.com/cards. And if you've never seen them, I highly recommend. Some real terrific work.
Thanks, Helen. Thank you. You should hop on our mailing list. What? Mailing list, you say? Because we'll be doing some future recaps. It's not the end of the road, exactly.
No, it's the end of the Veronica Mars road. We've taken the full circuit back to the start, and then we're going to head off in a different direction.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
We're going to do one episode a month for the rest of the year, recapping a different thing, and then figure out what is next.
You can stay absolutely in the know at all times by signing up over on vmipod.com/vmimail. Mm. But a sneak peek now? Do they deserve it? Have they earned it? Yes.
We're trying to keep things somewhat related to the Marsverse for now. Therefore, in October, we shall be recapping
Play It Again, Dick, as in Casablancas.
Mm. November's watch, we haven't decided yet. But December, something you've all been waiting for so long.
Brigadoon!
Brigadoon! Brigadoon!
Brigadoon! Oon, oon, oon! Is that it?
I think that happens in the original. There's a number of versions of Brigadoon, so we need to make sure we do watch the same one.
Oh, yeah. Let's definitely align on that.
We'd be delighted if you would join us for those things.
Yeah.
But before all that, let's take one last stroll around Neptune.
Content note, Veronica Mars contains heavy themes, and this episode includes storylines concerning murder, rape, and violence.
A long time ago, on Veronica Mars.
We meet Veronica Mars, high school detective with tiny jackets and floby hair, plus a heartbreak, an absent mother, a murdered best friend, and a rape to deal with.
We meet Logan Eccles, a rich boy with a rage problem.
We meet Duncan Kane, a human screensaver.
We meet Wallace Fennell, taped to a flagpole, then recruited to do Veronica's bidding for the next several years. Wallace, we have seen the future and you should run. Now, run!
We meet Sheriff Lamb, boo, local law enforcement with bad jokes and even worse morals.
And we meet Keith Mars, disgraced ex-sheriff, private investigator, and dad of the century. But why is he being so weird about Veronica surveilling beige billionaire Jake Kane? Riding my big old hog, I'm Jenny Owen Youngs.
And weren't you supposed to wait for me at the flagpole? I'm not sure I could have made that any clearer. I'm Helen Saltzman.
And dying to bake you something, I'm Special Agent Hrishikesh Hirway.
You're listening to Veronica Mars Investigations, Season 1, Episode 1,
Pilot.
Three Recap.
Rishi, welcome back to this pod that you birthed.
Thank you. It's so nice to come home.
As our father.
The answer to the question, who's your daddy?
Yeah, who is our daddy?
Yeah.
It is you.
At last, we get answers.
But how do you? What's your assessment of us? Since you're responsible for us, how do you think we turned out?
Yeah, how are your children doing?
I think the best thing that I could have ever hoped for is that the two of you would become friends. That was the real hidden motive here. And unless you two are excellent at faking friendship, I feel like mission was accomplished.
Yeah. Do you think we could have become friends without a very time-consuming and rather expensive pod project?
I guess that's possible, but I've never experienced it myself. Uh-huh. Yep. So as far as I know, this is the only way to become friends with someone.
May I start by sharing something that I read about the pilot script that made me gag? It described Veronica the following way. She is not cute. She is sexy, tough, prematurely jaded. Angelina Jolie at 17.
Blah.
Yeah.
Who is responsible?
Rob Thomas, of course.
Who's responsible for this cop? Oh, the
Rob Axel Thomas.
Okay, well.
Because remember, he changed the protagonist from a male character to a female character because he thought, well, that's more interesting and edgy.
Oh, so it was originally supposed to be a man who looked like Angelina Jolie at 17. Just sexy, sexy 17-year-old man.
Not cute.
Not cute. Not
jaded.
Weevil, basically.
Oh.
What could have been. The thing we didn't realize when we started recording this pod, the very first thing we recorded, is how we had watched different versions
right.
of the introduction of this show, because I've got whatever cut they have on Apple TV in Britain. Jenny has the Hulu cut. Hers is Sunshine. Mine is Darkness.
I watched the Sunshine version.
Rob Thomas said it breaks his heart, that introduction, because his choice was the Darkness one.
Mm-hmm.
It's not what he wanted. And mine does have this incredible opening line.
I'm never getting married.
Which is Chekhov's I'm never getting married. And you have to wait till season 4 for Anton to get his payoff.
It does feel strange. And watching it again this time, now knowing that there is this other version that I've now seen, the Darkness version, the breathlessness of the pacing of the pilot in general is really incomprehensible as the beginning. You're like, wow, this is how you start? You're going right in. It feels like you've been dropped in. In some ways, I thought it was quite good in that you're just kind of, you hit the ground running. But it also didn't totally feel like a beginning. And now I understand why, because the Darkness version, it does feel like a beginning.
Yeah.
Like you said, that opening line's quite the opening line. And yeah, Veronica just starts in so quickly with, this is my school, and blah, 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 and blah, 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 and blah, blah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I also feel like other things start with someone arriving at school in the morning and there's some cheerleaders running past in different cliques. So I think the noir is more original.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like the cut that you watched, Helen, is like the beginning of, like it starts at the beginning of a roller coaster where you're like inching, ratcheting up like really slowly, and you have a lot of time to think about like what's about to happen to you and whether you made a good choice getting on the roller coaster or not. And like there's some suspense and tension and tension and tension, and then that tension is released while you scream and whip around and maybe go upside down. And in the Hulu version that Rishi and I watched, you're just like, you just start in the middle of the roller coaster.
Like it's not even the exciting downhill part too. It's like the in-between part. It's like, okay, well that first exciting part is over and now we're in that little straightaway before you start climbing
again. Yeah, and it's like, you're going really fast. There's lots of information. Listen up. Don't blink.
There'll be a test later.
Yeah.
But then when you do get the scene that I have at the beginning, it's just dropped in the middle. And so it just feels like more flat bit of roller coaster. It's not in itself exciting. It's just as the opening, I think it's really good.
Yeah.
Especially considering that it's like been conceived as noir to start in the sunshine with cheerleaders, just like tonally feels so off.
Yeah.
And yet. I still think it's really well done and it does all the things that a pilot ought to do.
It's a hell of a pilot. I still think that. I've probably watched it, I don't know, 7 times at least now in my life. So I find it hard to judge it objectively because it's so familiar.
Yeah. Do you think it's going too far to say that this is the best episode of Veronica Mars?
I was thinking about that. And I do think maybe the finale of this season is slightly better constructed because they're not having to throw in the first part of every single plot.
Mm.
Yeah, season 1 finale is pretty dope. Also, Rishi, I feel like you're neglecting perhaps you've forgotten about when Veronica has a sexy sex dream about Leo after her, Leo, and Nicole get wasted. I just feel like perhaps you've forgotten
what's
really important.
Are you saying there's shirtless Max Greenfield?
There's everythingless Max Greenfield.
Shirtless, there's like undulation and a Billie Eilish placement, and it's a lot.
Maybe I have forgotten that.
Wow. It's also preceded by a lot of dancing. Listen.
Okay, I withdraw the statement, and I'll just stick with this is such a good pilot in terms of what a pilot needs to do.
Yeah.
You know, establishing the characters, establishing some of the primary relationships and tensions, and leaving you wanting more.
Absolutely. It did make me want to watch A Load again, and then I remembered...
You just spent several years doing that?
Yeah. I'll have to wait longer. So what I get when it then cuts to school is it says 20 hours earlier. So presumably she's been outside the motel at like 4 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
Watching people sex-peopling through a net curtain.
That's after deductions, before she was watching them through a gross curtain.
Boo!
Life is suffering.
She does have her calculus book on the seat next to her, and it has only just occurred to me to wonder how she could possibly be doing any kind of preparation or study for the test that she alludes to having the next day when she has to be watching this door nonstop.
Osmosis. She just puts a little finger on the book and absorbs it. That's why she's such an incredible student, despite being very busy.
Yes, yes.
Or she's a very unsafe driver and she just reads it while she was on her way there.
So then yours starts with Veronica voiceovering about how Neptune's a wealthy town without a middle class.
It's true.
Chopping down trees in the forest of exposition.
This I had not noticed in my many watches of the pilot. When she sees Wallace taped to the flagpole and he has snitch written across his chest, that snitch is misspelled. Doesn't have a T in it.
Whoa.
And they did that deliberately.
It's a very nice detail.
What would your reaction be if you turned up at school and there was a kid taped to the flagpole? Would you stand in a circle watching? Would you be taking selfies? Would you be helping? Or just walk on by?
I'd like to think that I would try to be useful, but it seems like maybe Weevil and company have struck some perhaps fear in the hearts of the standers-by.
I noticed someone calls Veronica a freak for going to cut Wallace down, but surely someone is a freak for taping someone with duct tape to a flagpole against their will, or enjoying that spectacle.
Did you guys also happen to notice how tall Wallace's tube socks are? They're like knee socks, man.
Maybe they taped them up.
So while he is naked from the knees up, he's got full coverage from the knees down.
Don't you find a small amount of clothing just serves to accentuate nakedness more? Like, I went on vacation with my father-in-law once. Who wore...
No, I hate the beginning of this anecdote.
Yeah, with that premise, with that disclaimer at the beginning, especially.
He wore Speedos with an open shirt, and the existence of the shirt served more to be like, look, I'm just wearing Speedos, than if he had just been wearing the Speedos.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I'll stop now. In school, we have Veronica asleep at her desk, which makes a lot more sense when you've seen the noir opening that she's been up all night surveilling a motel.
Right. Right. That's right. Yeah, I guess I was sort of internalizing that. Otherwise, you might just be like, well, she's lazy.
Yeah, why is she sleeping?
Why is she disrespecting pissy Mrs. Murphy, one of my favorite teachers at this school? Although she's not that pissy yet.
But, you know, she actually did do the work.
She touched the book long enough to be able to quote it from memory.
Rubbed a bit into her gums.
Says the word expatiates.
I'm not familiar with it.
Helen!
Speak or write in detail about.
Use it in an email today.
Seems unnecessary. Why wouldn't you just use a simpler word? So the abilities we've learnt so far. Learning calculus without looking at the book.
Mm-hmm.
Memorising Alexander Pope whilst asleep. And then in the school hallway, she knows before anyone else that random locker searches that aren't random are going to occur.
Where is she getting this intel? Telepathy?
Maybe it's from the dog that's accompanying Deputy Sax, Buster, who we never see again. So he's probably been fired for being a snitch.
Where do you think Veronica got such a big picture of Clemens?
Mm.
That's not the kind you snip out of the yearbook.
Mm-hmm. See, Jenny... every girl's got to have a hobby. Photography's hers.
Oh, right, I forgot.
So enlarging a picture is child's play.
Okay, yeah, she's like, enhance.
Yeah, but it would have been a picture of Clemens in his underwear doing something embarrassing that she's taken through a window rather than a color picture that's non-grainy of him facing the camera.
In his underwear or in a Speedo wearing an unbuttoned shirt?
A jacket and tie and then just a Speedo and one sock.
I hate what's happening.
Sorry.
But I love to see Sax's full glossy mustache once again after having lost him in the film.
Yeah.
Nice to see Deputy Sax.
Yeah.
And then we get the first ever Fast World Slow Veronica, which also includes, I did not notice until now, Slow Meatloaf.
And she's looking at a table of rich, popular kids, and we know one of them is Logan, and he's wearing orange, which I thought was more of a flashback Logan before Lily died, and then he pivoted to Pond. He's also wearing flip-flops. Do you ever see his naked feet again? I think of him as a very covered person until season four.
I cannot confirm nor deny.
Helen owns LoganEcclesFeet.com, just so you know.
Yeah, you can buy it.
for the right price.
Highly trafficked.
I think it's the only information we ever get about Shelley Pomeroy, that her dad was an ambassador to Belgium.
I was trying to remember. I was like, does that ever come up again?
I don't think she ever gets any lines even. And yet such an instrumental character.
Yeah.
To Veronica's rape plot. And then intro to Duncan. I hadn't missed him, and I hadn't missed Veronica's wig either. Right. Her present day hair in this pilot is pretty bad, but the wig, you're like, okay, take me back to Floby Town.
No, I would take the wig over the Floby any day of the week.
Yeah,
Helen.
I agree. I prefer the wig.
Okay.
The Floby is difficult.
I'd forgotten about the puka shell necklace on Logan as well. Glad to see that again.
It's great to see old friends.
The voiceover says that Logan's dad is a movie star and makes $20 million a picture. Do you buy that from what we see of Aaron, especially in 2004? Because his films that they show seem very straight to video.
I think maybe in his heyday, but also $20 million a picture in 2000.
Like Cameron Diaz was getting that in 2004.
Money. Exactly. Yeah, that's Jim Carrey post The Mask kind of money. $20 million a picture is absolute A-lister.
I don't think they show the films of an A-lister. They imply that he's B-minus list, but sells a lot of tabloids.
Got it.
I think he's in decline, but in his youth, he was more of an A-lister. Mm-hmm. Just because, Helen, just because you don't want to watch a movie about a handsome man who's, I don't know, in a semi-truck racing down. Yeah, just because you don't want to watch Car Punch.
Car Punch.
Listen, I recently watched Car Punch 9, and I have no regrets about the previous 8 or the 9th installment. And the franchise only continues to grow.
I guess here we have the blossoming of the friendship between Wallace and Veronica. And by friendship, I suppose the start of him being her lackey. But then Weevil rocks up and says some sexist stuff.
Yeah, listen, my beautiful, sweet angel prince Weevil, got a raw deal on this piece of script, and it's a bummer. However, I would like to point out that he looks fantastic. Thank you.
Sister, the only time I care what a woman has to say is when she's riding my big old hog. But even then, it's not so much words, just a bunch of oohs and ahs, you know?
So it's big, huh?
Legendary.
Well, let's see it. I mean, if it's as big as you say, I'll be your girlfriend. We could go to prom together. What? What seems to be the problem? I'm on a schedule here, Vato.
Dude, don't let Bloody talk to you like that.
Just to possibly play Weevil's advocate, do you think that he's saying those things, but he doesn't actually believe it? Because he obviously, even before we get to the end of this episode, he has a level of respect for Veronica that I think even exceeds his respect for like some of his fellow gang members. You know, he actually does listen to her. He takes her seriously. I think there's some level, I'm not saying that performative sexism is good, but I just don't, I don't think that he actually believes in the things that he's saying.
I suppose he's a product of the society he has been formed by, and there's probably plenty of this around. Plus, early 2000s were quite a gross time, if I remember correctly.
I like thinking of him as like a whiskey-soaked marshmallow.
Yeah, exactly.
We should market those, Jenny.
Yeah, it's not too late. It actually sounds pretty good.
There's so much in this episode that the establishment of the PCHs as like a pest to Wallace eventually seemed a bit redundant because it never goes anywhere again in this whole series, I don't think.
Yeah, but I do love the setup of the tension between Weevil and Logan. That feels so fraught, and it feels like there's a lot of history, even in their first encounter. You know, when Logan says, "I don't have a problem with you," and he's like, "Oh, but I've got a problem with you." And then, oh, it's just great.
Are you saying the air between them is just crackling with electricity that could only be diffused if they happen to get detention together a little later in the season and they end up playing poker? And as far as my headcanon goes, poker almost always leads to strip poker. It's just the natural order of things. And then, you know, they like mess up a bunch of books together. Like, that's pretty horny energy. They've got a lot to work out between themselves.
So we see Hector and another PCHer that I don't think we ever get to know stuffing some bottles into their jackets while Wallace is working at the sack and pack. And then they give him a dollar bill and laugh mockingly. And Wallace calls the cops, which gives Veronica the opportunity to say, "Not cops, it's Sheriff's Department. Don't know if that will ever change something property prices in this town."
Incorporation.
That's going to keep the kids hooked, isn't it? Oh, shame if that Sheriff's Department were ever to become a police department one day.
Wallace decides to hit the silent alarm, and it kicks off a chain of events. And, you know, some of those events are bad and some of those events are worse. But I think the worst thing that happens because Wallace hits the silent alarm is that while Sheriff Lamb is talking to him, Sheriff Lamb like sniffs Wallace very heavily. He like takes a big whiff of Wallace before he tells him to go ask the wizard for guts. Do you think it's legal for police officers to sniff you? Or sheriffs to sniff you?
Oh yeah, is that a Fourth Amendment violation?
I reckon Wallace will have been near some delicious cakes baking, and maybe he just smells irresistibly of cakes and cookies, and Lamb can't help but just like breathe it in.
I mean, yeah, Wallace, he probably smells great all the time. It's not like so much a question of why would you want to smell Wallace. It's more a question of, could you get your fucking snout away from me, Sheriff Lamb?
I do not like any of the Wizard of Oz jokes that are in this episode. I spotted three.
No.
You need to go see the wizard. Ask him for some guts.
I don't understand the connection here, too, of he comes up to Wallace, he sniffs him, and then he says, "Go see the wizard, you need some guts."
I can't smell a fart here, ergo, you need some guts.
If he had said, "Go see the wizard and ask for some deodorant," that would have tracked. Or if he had just said, if he sniffed and he said, "I can smell the fear on you," something like that, you know, but...
Go to the wizard and get some courage?
Yeah, something like that.
It's not a good joke.
No.
It's not a joke that makes sense, not a joke that creates laughs. He's a bad sheriff, this is how we learn it, in a very short time, so that's good writing. Another bad thing that happens is we see the Mars apartment complex, and looking at the pool provokes a flashback in Veronica.
No!
And oh no, it's the first sighting of Tits Out Duncan! And he's got a bit of chest hair that he has lost by the next time Tits Out Duncan appears. It's been mown.
He's just here, glistening, saying, "It's our song."
Also, is this a dream or something? Because then Veronica's mum, Leanne, walks out with a massive birthday cake and a load of people to wish her a happy birthday. Did that really happen? And if so, why isn't Duncan with the people rather than in the pool by himself?
No idea.
Because he's still buffering.
But good news, we meet backup. The first backup, because recast, of course.
Somebody I'm so happy to see. Backup 1.0!
And it's nice to see Veronica on the beach with backup and Wallace flying his little plane. That's wholesome.
Yeah, I feel like this doesn't come back around until Wallace is in college building planes to fly again, which some might consider too long a span of time to go by with no reference to Wallace's love of remote control planes.
Also, something that doesn't come back till season four is Mars Investigations offices having windows you can actually see through. So enjoy them now while they last.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, not all of them, just some of them.
Yeah, you can see palms through them this time rather than a vague yellow light. Cliff turns up. Cliff looks hot, except his jacket's too big, so he looks like a ventriloquist dummy.
He does, doesn't he?
He looked like such a baby in this. I had felt like I had forgotten what he looked like so young.
I like that I remember it because it just happened in season four, but here in season one, the seed is planted. Cliff loves to leave files just out and about for Veronica to read if she so chooses.
Yum, yum, yum.
And I didn't remember that Loretta Cancun shows up so early.
Oh, yeah.
Here she is.
That's a long-term relationship they've got.
Mm-hmm.
This episode is such a conveyor belt of stuff being introduced that along next is Celeste Kane, who is an awful person, but her jackets are the only ones that fit.
And she's just like sweeping around. Ah, don't get the wrong idea, Mr. Mars. I don't like it. Just cranked up to 11, swishing this way and that, commanding every room she enters, driving away in her red Jaguar. I am feeling it.
She never really gets better, does she? She's not a character where they've given her some kind of lovable quality amidst all of the like horrible stinky qualities.
Yeah, or really even any kind of deeper quality.
Who needs deeper quality when you have tailoring?
Who needs deeper quality when the next thing we see is Keith eating like a bologna sandwich? Do y'all have bologna in the UK?
What we call it.
A trash meat that is reserved for the United States.
We have a lot of trash meats. We've got this one that is like a reformed pork meat, but there's like a teddy bear's face in it in two different shades of pork.
I'm upset and Googling. Oh, God, no! Simply no, Helen.
Oh, it's also a scary clown one.
Oh, no. Rishi, whatever you do, don't Google teddy bear face in meat.
Well, now I have no choice.
People think our country is so sophisticated, and it is.
And
dear
it is.
Listener, whatever you do, don't Google teddy bear face and meat.
Wow. Oh, God.
So there's some bloody blur about what Celeste's doing there. She thinks Jake's having an affair, but Keith's got to go and catch a bail jumper.
I do think that that is such a nice bit of groundwork, though, that everyone down to the secretarial pool became millionaires thanks to Jake Kane. So, you know, the uphill battle of trying to get to him, I don't know, it has a real obstacle, not just, oh, he's a bad guy. You know, he has public support in this very legit way. I love it.
He doesn't quite pay off in the end as a big bad sort of character.
No.
And they dehumanize him a bit. He's fallible because he loves his children and makes terrible decisions, and his jackets are enormous.
I'd say he's a better character, more sympathetic and better developed than Celeste Kane ever gets to be.
Definitely.
You can't be a good character on the show and have jackets that fit.
It's one or the other, Rishi.
I've studied this. That's the rule.
All right.
In this flashback, Veronica refers to Duncan Kane as her first and only love.
God, how sad.
I'm breathing through it.
Flashback to the Pep Squad car wash.
And we see Lily, and she captures our hearts immediately, saying her little, I've got a secret, a good one, business.
I'll tell you later in episode 22. And still in flashback land, we see the Kane house on the night of Lily's murder, and Duncan just rocking back and forth. In the original pilot, Lily's body was dumped into a river and found later, but the network found that too disturbing because it involved Jake Kane disposing of his own daughter's body. So that's why she is found on the Kane property.
Huh. Even though he's ultimately a red herring, because they didn't know that yet.
Also, don't you think river would be a bit too Twin Peaksy.
Right?
Yeah.
So then my version goes back to the Camelot Motel, where Veronica waits in her car while Jake goes into room number 6 at 1 a.m. Does that happen for you?
Yeah, like sort of intercut with Keith seeing Lily's body and Lamb comforting the Canes, looking like an actual human being for like 2 seconds. And then Veronica ultimately walking up on the scene as well and seeing Lily, and the bit about Logan displaying his mysterious New York accent while he confronts Veronica, and we see Abel Koontz on the TV, the shoes and the backpack.
I'm a disgruntled former software engineer, Veronica Mars. I'll do anything for my disgruntlement.
And then we see
God, I miss him.
And company roll up on the steakhouse.
Okay. There's also Leanne packing to leave Neptune because the loss of status and income is too much for her, according to Veronica's voiceover.
Oh, yep.
But they don't return to that well, do they? They're just like, oh no, Leanne is just an alcoholic now, that's why she left. Or the shame about maybe Veronica having sex with her brother.
Yeah, they flatten it out.
But in the pilot, Leanne's a snob.
Yeah. Yeah, she's not very likable from this episode. Or maybe ever.
So I guess then I get for the second time the line, well, this can't be good, from Veronica at the motel. But for you, the first time.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And Weevil doing a Wizard of Oz joke this time. And a Full Metal Jacket ref.
We get it. You're a badass, okay? But for once, don't be stupid.
Not bad advice.
All right, 1 week. After that, we come for you, your boy, and your little dog, too.
Yeah, back up, right. Be cool.
You get lonely out here, remember. Weevil love you long time.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say that Weevil maybe hasn't seen Full Metal Jacket, but he has heard Two Live Crew. And he's quoting from them sampling that line from the movie in Me So Horny.
Oh, I'm sorry. What was that? What was the name of that song, Rishi?
You heard
okay,
me.
Cool.
I'm not saying it again.
Helen, one time Rishi sent me a screenshot that was like, how many days until 420 he had Googled, and the answer was 69. And I was like, I can't wait to put this on the internet and show everyone that follows me how much you care about me that you would have done this and sent it to me. And he was like, don't you dare. The people can never know that I Googled how many days until 420 and the answer was 69. And he may well ask you to remove me telling this from the pod. To preserve his image, which is, of course, very shiny.
Impeccable. He refused to say the word vagina on my show the other day.
Why are you so afraid of vaginas, Rishi?
Not in and of themselves. It's more just, you know, the discourse doesn't need me discussing them. I don't know.
Oh, sure. You did it for the discourse.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of vaginas,
ooh.
This has got to be good.
Something that Weevil says that, you know, is perhaps inappropriate. Perhaps in the performative context you laid out for us, Rishi, though, it's slightly less offensive. He tells Veronica that he hears she must really lay the pipe right. Why am I telling you this? Because I love the phrase, lay the pipe right. There's like really something. When you think about how pipe gets laid in a practical sense, you know, you dig a channel and then you like put pipe into it and you like bury it and like pat the dirt down.
And then you leave it there for years.
Yeah, to pass fluids from one location to another. I don't know. I just really like that that's worked its way into the vernacular. Thank you.
I think the only other time I've ever come across this expression was in Dawson's Creek when someone is talking about Pacey having sex with the teacher or laying pipes with her. Maybe they were just literally laying pipes out in the road.
I feel like I hear this all the time. Maybe, you know, I'm just talking to the wrong people, the right people, the pipe people.
A lot of people I know just don't talk about pipes. They just don't acknowledge pipe work.
Sure.
It, in our perhaps conversations.
And this is why everyone thinks England is more sophisticated than the United States, because we're over here screaming about laying the pipe right, and you are not.
No, they're too busy making faces out of meat.
That's how we express ourselves. Do you want to make meat face with me is how we proposition people.
Oh, nice, nice.
Making meat face is much grosser than laying pipe as a metaphor.
We'll put our two shades of meat together and make a face.
Oh, God.
Yeah, it's a very bad place. Veronica Mars Investigations is sponsored by Girlfriend Collective. And have you ever gone around wearing old plastic bottles, fishing nets, just general waste? Because Girlfriend Collective turns all of that old waste into clothing.
This is so incredible.
Once it was polluting the world, and now it's something you can jog in.
It could be a bra, it could be leggings, it could be shorts, or a tank, or a tee, or a swimsuit. Good gravy.
Well, and the leggings have pockets. Pockets.
Praise Cthulhu. That is incredible news. I also am thrilled to learn that their best-selling leggings are also, in addition to having pockets, in addition to being bepocketed, they're also squat-proof.
Wow. Right, so no inadvertent mooning situations mid-squat.
Exactly. Join the collective today. For listeners of the show, Girlfriend Collective is offering $25 off your purchase of $100 or more when you go to girlfriend.com/Veronica.
That is $25 off $100 or more when you go to girlfriend.com/Veronica.
Girlfriend.com/Veronica.
You're listening to VMI Pod, which suggests you are pod interested. May I direct your attention to the podcast Dead Air, a fiction show in which a true crime podcast host is roped into a decades-old murder when she discovers the wrong person was in prison for the crime.
Was it Abel Coons?
It's not Abel Coons, but the murder victim is a racehorse heiress. So
dude,
maybe a horse did it.
Maybe. Are podcast hosts more in danger of being roped into a decades-old murder? Helen, should we be concerned for ourselves?
Podcast hosts, you can get us to do anything. Rope us in. Are we qualified? We're just lowly podcast hosts. But this doesn't stop the one in Dead Air. She must plunge into danger to try to find the real killer. The racehorse heiress must be avenged.
Listen to Dead Air, available wherever you get your podcasts.
Veronica Mars Investigations brought to you by Dipsy, an audio app full of short, sexy stories designed to turn you on. But if you're not in the mood right now to be turned on, they have other stuff too. Like if you're in the mood for a good sleep, they have a bunch of stuff to help lull you there. They've got stories, they've got characters who can tuck you in and then accompany you as you drift off to Slumber Town. Or they've got dreamscapes. You can go on a gentle train ride. You might think, well, why would you listen to a train ride when you could just get on a train? Because you can go on the train ride whilst lying in bed. There's no drunk person puking into a bag on this train.
That sounds like a bad train.
You've not been on a British train in a while, Jenny.
Yeah. Plus, you save money on the train fare.
But if you just want to listen to some soothing sounds, like a cabin fireplace.
Yes.
Or a babbling brook. Or some crickets.
I love that they have not forgotten to include crickets. I'm a huge fan. And they're not available year-round, even here in Maine.
But they are on Dipsy.
Mm-hmm.
All seasons crickets.
For listeners of the show, Dipsy is offering an extended 30-day free trial when you go to dipsystories.com/Veronica.
That's 30 days of full access for free when you go to dipsystories.com/Veronica.
dipsystories.com/Veronica.
And on to the plot that I found the most difficult in this episode, the plot about Veronica's rape. And I think it was more difficult now with the way that this plot plays out being fresher in my mind and the way that it's investigated in, is it the penultimate episode of this season? And this just being like the tip of the wretched iceberg.
Mm.
Also, Duncan sees Veronica walking into Shelley Pomeroy's party, and there's just a girl like munching on his ear.
Attached to his face. She's like a remora cleaning the parasites off of his underside.
Dick hasn't entered the show yet either, so they have to make other people do all of the worst stuff.
This is just like deeply disturbing to see, but also for such an action-packed, as you said, Helen, conveyor belt of a pilot, it does keep, like, you know, cranking up. I don't know, we've already had a dead body, and now there's something like even that feels even more intense than a dead body, you know, like mystery upon mystery upon mystery.
Mm-hmm.
They just really want Veronica to have the worst time.
Yeah. It makes the outcast status for her just so much more painful.
Yeah. No one else to talk to about it. And she never tells Keith about it. Like, he never finds out, does he?
No.
Yeah. And that line is quite heartbreaking, too.
Then back at the Camelot, Veronica takes some pictures with her huge lens of Jake leaving the room, but there's a woman's hand holding the door while they talk. Tantalizing. And then the first glimpse, I think, of Logan in his yellow Xterra. And he calls Veronica Ronnie, which is something they then give to Dick once they've invented Dick.
Right.
Hey, Ronnie. Hey, we've decided that we'd rather surf than study today. You want to come with? Duncan will promise to take his shirt off. Is that sweet in the pot? Does it make you horny? EBK, flex for your ex.
Shut up, Logan.
All right. Hey. What do you say to a little hooch, huh? What's the matter? Aren't you your mother's daughter? Now there was a woman who could drink. Hey, what's she up to nowadays? Maybe she'll join us. You know where she is? Any clue?
Leave her alone, man.
Ooh, chill pill, man.
Gosh, used to be fun, man.
This is, Logan is bad in this. Not a fan.
Do you think he was this bad when he and Veronica were friends while Lily was still alive?
No.
Do you think he was gross and she was just like, ah, because it wasn't aimed at her?
Yeah. I think Lily's death has altered him for the worse. I think he's like in a darker place and lashing out.
I think it's a little from column A and a little from column B.
Mm.
That he was probably not awesome, but she went along with it and was like, well, he's my boyfriend's best friend, so.
And this is what people are like.
Yeah, he gets a pass, but and I think he also has probably gotten much worse after his sister passed away.
But also what we see of flashback Veronica in later episodes, because in this one it's just awful events. She's pretty dull. She's a dull person who seems like she wouldn't call someone out for being awful, and she wouldn't say funny things to like snap back at them.
No, she was the one true love of Duncan Kane.
Yeah.
They were a match made in a beige room.
Like a picture frame with the stock photo still in it.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Tell you what, though, say what you like about Flo-Bee haircuts, but when she's backlit, the ends really pick up the light. Radiant.
Jesus H. Christ, if you can believe it, find out that it's been 8 months since Veronica's seen her mother, who left nothing but a unicorn music box and a note. Tale as old as time.
And yet, Veronica loves unicorns and they haven't been spoiled for her by association with Leanne. I don't buy this. Because she's so bitter about everything to do with her mum, and yet later in the show there's this repeat unicorn thing she likes. Tell you what I do love in this episode, Veronica's various trousers. In the next scene, back at school lunch.
The brown plaid pants?
Huge! Tiny jacket. Huge trousers.
I contrast for the composition. Very exciting pants. Wallace is like, you should hear what people say about you. I bet.
Well, she probably does hear it because she's bugged everyone. Actually, no bugs in this episode, are there?
Just, we got to start with the taser. Start slow. Ease him into it.
Yeah.
I do really like this scene between the two of them. It just feels like they've got such great natural friend chemistry already.
Yeah.
Girl, you should hear what people say about you.
So then what are you doing sitting here?
You sat next to me.
This is my table.
And what a fine table it is. What do you suppose this is made of? Oak?
Look, if people are saying such awful things...
Well, I figure I've got a choice. I can either go hang out with the punks who laughed at me, took pictures of me while I was taped to that flagpole, or I can hang out with the chick who cut me down.
Wallace is underrated, forever underrated, when he's scratching at the table saying, what do you think this is made of? Oak?
Yeah.
Beautiful.
That's so good.
I feel like Wallace is really selling to me the idea that, yeah, he's signing up for what Veronica's going to ask of him from in this episode and many, many, many future episodes. He's enthusiastic about being a friend. He really, like, that loyalty comes through right here.
But also, this episode is the lowest we see Wallace. It's just like up and up for him being super popular.
Is it the lowest? Stuff. He was pretty up high on that flagpole.
So these two new friends hatch a little plan, a very cool little plan to get back at the PCHers for taping Wallace on the flagpole. It has many steps. First, we need to meet Corny. Who's going to do some custom pottery and even throw in the glazing gratis.
I think in the original recap of this, I did quibble with the timeline of being able to fire and glaze pottery in the time they have.
Right.
Well, to allow for that time to elapse, don't worry. Veronica's going to go through all her little surveillance photos and find a license plate from the Camelot. What could it be? Who could it belong to?
Why does she put photos up in her room of people she surveilled?
Because she's twisted. Because she's not like other girls, Helen.
Certainly not. Also, she puts up a photo of Jake Kane that is played by someone else.
Yeah, exactly. Not Jake Kane. Yeah.
What the hell?
It's some other beige man. At least the show is like all the rich white men look alike.
Oh, man. Mm.
Saying what we're all thinking.
Yeah.
The Mars apartment's way different in the pilot, isn't it? It looks a lot bigger. There's like a separate dining room with a glass panel, windows in different places.
Oh, yeah.
Gosh, I hadn't noticed that. My brain just automatically configured it into the apartment that I know.
Yeah, it looks too nice. I think Mars Investigations is quite different as well. I guess because they built them in studios maybe after the pilot.
Right.
And maybe also the Mars apartment looked like they were doing too well. Because to me, it's like, wow, great place with a pool and a sea view.
Yeah, you're not aspiring to lower middle class in this apartment.
No, but I love this scene where Keith comes home really excited. Love to see happy Keith. It's nourishing.
And?
Who's your daddy?
Ugh, I hate it when you say that.
You know what? This is important. You remember this. I used to be cool.
When?
77. Trans Am, Blue Oyster Cult in the A-track, a foxy stacked blonde riding shotgun racing for pink slips. Now, wait a minute. I'm thinking of a Springsteen song. Scratch everything. I was never cool.
I don't know which bothers me more, foxy or stacked.
A nailed a bail jumper, 100 yards. Mexico. $2,500. No sack dinners tonight. Tonight, we eat. Like the lower middle class to which we aspire. Fire up the bocce! For real steaks.
He's ready to grill some steaks, and as he does, Veronica shows him the license plate photo, and he looks at it for 1 second and is immediately like, stay away from Jake Kane! I'm dropping the case! Nothing suspicious about that.
Presumably Keith's response means he knows that Leanne's in town. And it's not telling Veronica.
Yeah, and in fact, he knows what her license plate number is.
Yeah, off by heart.
He's already run that plate.
Yeah.
And then Veronica's got a plan to save Wallace from the PCHs and pulls out a video camera and points it at the Seventh Vale Gentlemen's Club where Loretta Cancun happens to work. And at school, Veronica and Wallace are like running. They perfectly time it to see Logan opening up his locker for Sheriff Lam and Deputy Sachs. So Lam comes for this locker search, whereas Veronica's locker search was just Sachs and the dog.
This is a celebrity locker search. Stay tuned on ETV, Celebrity Locker Search. Hosted by Logan's dad.
Handsome, bong. They take Logan away, but not before he points at Veronica and says he'll friggin' get her, etc.
But I do love how amused he is, even as he's doing that.
Yeah, he's enjoying it?
He's a little impressed. He's a little impressed.
Okay, so, this plan has so many steps. They scoot over to the sheriff's department, and Wallace uses his plane's remote control to start a fire in the bong.
It's their magnets, bitch moment.
Exactly. So that firemen will have to come put it out, and then they can swing by the fire department, where Veronica can be referred to as Smokey the Barely Legal. And the firemen fucking swapped the Sack and Pack video out for them, because why not break the law while we're putting out this fire?
They still love Keith, and who wouldn't? Nonetheless, that's got to be more than just loving Keith would be wise.
Why would an adult man who respects Keith Mars refer to his daughter as Smokey the Barely Legal? A question.
Well, in the Rob Thomas verse, everyone's on the sex offender register.
It's true. Since we just met Inga, who was reacting to the fire, we meet her so that Veronica can immediately do an impression of her in order to run the plate to find out that it's Leanne's car, which we already said and you already saw in the episode, so you're not surprised right now, but I did have to yell.
How come she has to call San Juan Capistrano Police Department to get the number? Has Private Eyes with a Z not launched yet?
We haven't seen it. It either hasn't launched or the writers haven't thought of it.
He's still full of happiness and Veronica has to puncture it by wanting to know why they're dropping the cane case. And Keith does some pretty obvious lying. I would have thought he'd be better at lying.
Well, maybe not to Veronica.
And I'm sure saying just drop it would work great for her.
Yeah.
The best thing in this scene is Veronica's trousers again, which are like ABBA pantaloons gathered at the bottom. But for day, so they're not made out of satin. They're like cord or something.
Veronica swings by the sheriff's department and sees Inga yet again. And this sends her back into yet another flashback to when she came to report a crime.
A year ago. She's not been in the sheriff's department since she reported the rape. A year ago, she's not been in to steal evidence and look at files.
Seems unlikely.
She's not come into her powers yet.
And in this flashback, Lam is extremely dismissive of her report and tells her to go see the wizard to ask for a little backbone. I'm starting to think that Lam has never actually seen the Wizard of Oz. That's what I'm getting from this.
Maybe he's seen a porn version of it. Go see the wizard to get some balls. Lam says Veronica's full name, but I'm too sad to drink.
Too sad.
And then to the courtroom in the present day, and Lam is like slouching and grinning in the witness stand like he's telling anecdotes at a party, but eventually gets around to testifying that the bikers stole the booze at the second pack. And Veronica Mars has walked in. That's shaken him a little bit. But luckily, they've got the evidence on tape.
Or have they?
Or have they? In fact... Nay, Helen, what the nice, strapping, broad-shouldered fireman swapped into the video case was some surveillance footage that Veronica took at the Seventh Vale of somebody from the sheriff's department bringing a woman into his police cruiser. Is she a sex worker? Is she a dancer in need of a ride home? It's unclear exactly what is specifically, precisely, definitively going on here, but it does not look good, and it's definitely not a video of Hector and friend stealing booze.
That's Loretta Cancun.
Oh, are you saying, was it Loretta Cancun specifically?
Yes, yes, yes. That's how he's able to immediately turn to let's dismiss the case against Loretta Cancun.
Oh my God.
This is how Veronica is able to kill two birds with one stone. Basically, she's able to get the case dropped against the Sack and Pack folks while helping with the Loretta Cancun case.
I thought it was like a random, like a friend of Loretta Cancun or a coworker or whatever that like was just like somebody else who could help prove that the cops were allowing them to keep their liquor license in exchange for. Okay, anyway.
Case dismissed.
Because that's how it works.
It wouldn't be at all remarkable that there was suddenly a very wrong tape in evidence, right?
No, we just move on.
Chaos ensues in the courtroom and Veronica gives Lam a finger gun, which I enjoy and he doesn't. And she goes to the beach. Wallace is flying his lovely little plane again and she hands him the evidence envelope, which has the Sack and Pack tape in it. And he says that he owes her and he has no idea what is coming. He's repaying that favour for 15 years.
I owe you big time.
I had my own reasons for doing it, trust me.
Oh, no, you don't. You really think I'm gonna let you get away with that? That might play with the masses. But underneath that angry young woman's shell, there's a slightly less angry young woman who's just dying to bake me something. You're Marshmallow Veronica Mars? A Twinkie.
Wallace does not believe that Veronica Mars got anything out of this for herself. He thinks she just did it to be a nice person.
Oh,
he says the whole angry young woman inside a slightly less angry, whatever. It's angry young women all the way down, Wallace.
Yeah.
But she will bake you things.
That's true.
He's right about that.
Probably a self-serving reason for that. But they have a bit of time off just flying his plane together. And then Wallace is like, Veronica, your car, there's like something green on it. There's some moss growing on it. Or like, did a bird do a really greenish shit on it? No, it's a Logan lying on it in his brown and green garb.
Sprawled across the hood.
Three other non-talking white guys with him.
Where's Duncan in this? I mean, he's usually part of the crew of non-speaking white guys with Logan.
And then some violence that I still find pretty menacing, even after all this time.
Do you know what your little joke cost me?
Well, I'm pretty sure you won't be getting your bong back.
Oh. Wrong answer. Did you care to guess again?
Clearly your sense of humor.
Nope. I'm usually so good at pop quizzes. Now, the correct answer is my car. That's right. My daddy took my T-Bird away. And you know what I won't be having? Fun.
Logan.
What do we have here? Vandalism? No. The only vandalism that happens in this town goes through me.
What? Yeah. Listen, man, I don't have a problem with you.
That's where you're wrong.
Hey, yo, is this old town any good? I mean, my little sister likes it, but you know, she likes ponies and juice boxes too.
Suddenly feel like I'm in a scene from The Outsiders.
Be cool, Soda Pop.
An Outsiders reference and an O-Town reference. They are really covering bases as to what the teens of 2004 were into.
Dude,
are you an outsider or an O-Town? It's like Sharks and Jets.
It's the Gilmore Girls kind of rule, you know? If you're cool, you're cool, then you understand pop culture references from before your time.
But nothing from your time.
No.
Yeah.
And it's interesting, the power rankings here, because Logan has power because he has a crowbar, but Weevil has more power.
Because he has a bunch of dudes. At first I thought, Weevil is wearing a Henley in the pilot and that motorcycle jacket at the same time. But I am extremely unhappy to report that that is not a Henley. That is a polo shirt. Yep. Weevil was playing golf before he came over to smash some headlights. Weevil was down at the country club before he came to do a little revenge car violence. Who put Weevil in a polo shirt? They were so close. They were like three buttons at the neck. Yes, keep going. Yes, so hot. And then a little collar that folds over. No, you fucked it.
They went too far. They were there and then they overshot.
Weevil punches Logan and I think it's probably the only face punching that doesn't make Veronica hot. She's never hot for a Weevil punch.
Hmm. That's because that's how you know they're really friends.
She says she doesn't want Logan's apology, which is good because she probably wouldn't have got one. And then Weevil asks about the surveillance tape going poof. And I like that Wallace is like playing this pretty cool.
He's not playing cool. He is cool.
Correct.
I do love seeing Veronica and Weevil's alliance form. That's one of my favorite parts of the show, and I hate when they mess with it.
Yeah.
So that surveillance tape just poof.
That's fortunate.
My uncle has a body shop on the highway. If you come in, you know, I can make sure your body gets the full service treatment.
Okay, now you apologize.
I'm sorry. Was that too dirty?
Not to me, dork. To him.
Right. No.
Fine. He has the only copy of the Sack and Pack video. Wallace, let's go decide what to do with it.
Okay, wait. Look. I'm sorry, man, for, you know, taping you to the flagpole. I'm sorry. All right. Can I have the tape back now? Nope.
And then the bitterness of Veronica as she drives at night, sad voiceover. This morning when I woke up, I had one person in the world I could count on. But if there's something I've learned in this business, the people you love let you down.
Mmm.
And then you can go and break into their safes. And look into their files, their murder files about your best friend, which they're keeping up to date.
Some of these notes on this file are less than a month old. And there is a fucking copy of the license plate picture that Veronica took. What could it mean?
And then Keith comes in later saying, I saw the light was on, but it's so dark in there.
Footage not found.
I saw that it was like 1 degree lighter than Vanta Black.
Vanta Black, exactly.
And she's listening to the unicorn music box. That's the soundtrack to our lives, isn't it? Just rocking out at night on her own to our music box from our mum, whom we resent.
I like that Keith has rented the South Park movie. That pleases me.
A movie from Veronica's actual lifespan, so...
Yeah, promising.
A touching moment, as he says, who's your daddy? And she says, you are.
It's mostly touching.
But she still wants answers, damn it, and getting answers is what she does. So she goes to the motel and knocks on door number 6, but no one answers. But she vows to bring her family back together. And then an instrumental cover of All You Need Is Love plays. And how much would that have cost? Like, entire budget?
Not as much as, like, a Beatles master, at least. But seems like it would cost a bunch. I found that the most certain way to ensure that I will eventually get answers is to stare into my car's rearview mirror so that I am lit up by the headlights of the car behind me. While doing a little voiceover, making some vows, you know, like really set the tone, set your intention into the rear view. Perhaps as a non-driving person, Helen, you've never known this pure ritual. It's a very important part of my life.
And then Veronica has to drink because she says her own name.
But not while she's driving, Helen.
Better not.
I guess she's at the motel now.
And she does carry this massive silver thermos flask around with her this episode, which I was relieved to see. I don't think she does that again. I assume there's like espresso in it, like 2 gallons of espresso.
Hell yeah. I love a big thermos full of coffee.
Do you say we've reached the end of this episode again?
Again. What's going to happen to us? Have we solved it? Are we free of Veronica Mars now?
Close the loop.
Yeah.
Let's go to our Southern Californian marshmallow and legal expert Lo Dodds for re-lowdown.
Hell yeah. Veronica says in her voiceover that she used to sit at the popular kids' table because her dad was the local sheriff. Was it your experience that you were socially elevated because your dad was chief of police?
Well, at first, I have to say that my father was deputy chief of police. He was also second in command of a city that was like 30, 40 minutes away. And we didn't have a popular table. We had a popular tree.
Tree. How very literal.
And I did not hang out there. And my father's status as a cop did not get me there, sadly.
Did people ask you if you could get them some of the drugs that he'd confiscated?
No. You know, I don't remember ever talking that much with people about the fact that my dad was a cop. Like, it wasn't something that came up a lot in school. I suppose if he were a local cop that was pulling over the kids for speeding, then that might have been. But I don't think that would have made me very popular.
Or if some of your school colleagues' rich parents had been trying to cozy up to your dad for rich person chicanery stuff, then maybe you would have been eating lunch with them.
My father would find it highly unethical to tell me that. So if that happened, he didn't. He wouldn't. The man would not tell me.
So it'd be unethical to tell you, but not unethical to do it.
I mean, no, he wouldn't take a bribe either. But if anyone tried to bribe him or cozy up to him, my father wouldn't have told me.
I'll experiment one day. It'll be like, Tony, here's $10 for a little job. So Veronica saying that her previous advantages socially were because her dad's sheriff. We call bullshit.
Yeah. Well, you know, I would, like I said, I would believe it if it was this small of a place and he was the only sheriff and therefore people were constantly talking to him and he was an elected official. That's the thing about being a sheriff versus a chief of police or a deputy chief of police. You're elected. Therefore, you would have spent a significant amount of time meeting with people and talking to people about their concerns before you ever got elected. So that, you know, you would have had more exposure. But so I'm willing to buy it for her sake.
I can't remember if we talked in the past about what crimes it is to tape someone to a flagpole.
It's battery, it's assault, false imprisonment. It's I don't know if it would rise to the level of some sort of special torture enhancement.
Maybe when you pull the tape off.
Yeah, that had to hurt. Veronica's committing a crime lately by having that knife on school grounds. I think we talked about that previously because you can't have those types of weapons on school grounds.
It's a tiny knife.
Yeah, you couldn't have any retractable knives. I don't know if you had this as well, Jenny, when you were in high school, but we were not allowed any knives, but especially not retractable knives.
Yeah, definitely not. We see Sheriff Lamb. Remember Sheriff Lamb? Do a lot of disturbing things in this episode. And the one that I personally am most confused by and curious about is that we see him sniff Wallace very deeply. And my question is like two parts. A, is he allowed to do that? And then B, zooming out a little bit, like what sort of boundaries do police officers have to observe when they're having a conversation with you?
Did you say he sniffs Wallace? What was...
Yeah, he takes a big sniff of Wallace and says his little thing about going to ask the wizard for some guts.
Well, the police are allowed to...
Sniff you?
Yeah, well, think about you're getting pulled over for rolling a stop sign. The police approach your car. Mm-hmm. Your car smells like weed. The police mm-hmm. are allowed mm-hmm. to... take note of that and use that mm-hmm. if they needed to justify some sort of probable cause for a search, something like that. So yeah, I don't see any issue with that. I find it weird, but yeah, if maybe he was doing that to test to see if Wallace smelled like weed or smelled like he was intoxicated or something like that. Obviously, what's ever observable using their senses is something they can testify to later to justify whatever actions they take after that.
With Sheriff Lamb, profiling Wallace, we just thought you couldn't resist him.
Yes, it is profiling. And again, the whole idea that he would use that in that situation where him being drunk or high would really not have a lot of relevance to the situation of a videotape existing or not.
You know, when you start to ask a question like, what boundaries do police officers have to observe? And then you remember what kind of bullshit... and heinous acts police officers get up to on a daily basis, and then you're like, I retract my question. You did say in the original lowdown for this episode, first time we talked about it, so many moons ago, were we ever so young, that Wallace and Veronica are only committing a misdemeanor by planting the bong. However, would there be a specific charge for Wallace using his remote control to ignite the bong?
So we have to remember also that Veronica and Wallace didn't place the bomb. The police took it from Logan and they put it in evidence locker.
Ooh, so wily.
Yeah, they're very wily about it, which is why it ended up in the evidence locker that it was taken from Logan. Logan there committing the misdemeanor offense of having drug paraphernalia. However, you know, nobody prosecutes for marijuana paraphernalia. Also, it hadn't been used to smoke marijuana, so I have I see very little happening there. But the fact was, they collected it. They put it in the evidence locker. Possession of the stuff to make or a incendiary device and whatever they use to make it, that is a misdemeanor. So just having it is a misdemeanor. Corny, all the people involved in that. But Wallace, by detonating it, there is a statute, the penal code section, specifically towards detonating a bomb with the intent to injure or murder, but he's not doing that. So really, he's just going to be charged with the having of the bomb and whatever results from blowing up the bomb. So in this case, vandalism, destruction of property, evidence tampering, all of that stuff, he's going to get charged with that. But again, did they do that? They're going to get charged with conspiracy because they were all involved in doing that switch.
What charge would there be for the firefighter for switching the evidence?
Obstruction of justice, evidence tampering, conspiracy for all of the stuff that Wallace and Veronica did. Yeah, I don't know. I think I said this before. I don't know why that guy would risk his whole job for this.
We see Cliff ask for the case against Loretta Cancun to be dismissed. But hey, what actually happens when a case is dismissed? Is it immediate? Is it poof? Is your record expunged in any way?
Yes. Yeah. Well, yes, it can be. So if you are not in custody, then you're just dismissed. There's a judgment of dismissal. There is paperwork, but you are already free to go. So your lawyer can wrap that up. If you're in custody, though, they tend to take you back into custody while that's being processed because you generally have some paperwork to fill out. They need to give you your effects back, all of that good stuff. So that is not instantaneous. But if she was just sitting there and she was already free to go, Cliff would have wrapped it up. Would she be gone? In the wind.
Whoa!
I did it!
She's got a gavel.
Wow.
She's armed and dangerous.
Lo unleashed. We made the mistake of sending Lo a commemorative gavel in honor of her time with us, and now she's gone mad with power.
I'm just going to use it all the time for all my decisions at work. I'm just going to bang it after every Zoom meeting. It's going to be awesome.
Under what circumstances, Lo, is it appropriate to pound a gavel in the courtroom? Because there is a gavel pounding briefly in this episode.
Trials I have been in and courtrooms I have been in, the judge does not usually use a gavel, but it is traditionally used when the court is adjourned. So when you are leaving, when the judge is like, I'm done with this shit, and gets up and leaves. But from my experience, normally they just say, okay, and whatever they've decided to do, and the court will announce it, and then the bailiff will announce that the judge is leaving. I know that judges are on TV are always shown like pounding it when things get crazy in the courtroom. I have never seen that happen. The bailiffs in the courtroom are there to take you away if you get crazy. So,
do they tase people in the court to stop them getting out of hand?
They are armed with everything, but generally speaking, if things get crazy, the bailiffs just escort you from the courtroom.
Well, they've got to catch you first.
I mean, they're very small. Courtrooms are not very big.
So it's not required. You could still adjourn court without banging a gavel?
Yeah, you can adjourn it just via your voice if you want.
But it feels like a little more adjourned if you bang a gavel.
I'm trying to remember a single gavel in any courtroom I've been in. And I'm sure they existed because the judge is behind the bench. It's like lowered like a desk. So you can't really see always what he or she is looking at. So they're probably there. And I'm sure some judges use something like a gavel, potentially something else that they bang on the desk.
That's like a little, they have a little button that plays the junk junk from Law and Order.
No, they have an easy button. It's just like, this is over.
Mm.
They got one of those Amazon buttons to automatically order more gavels.
Rishi.
Hello.
How does it feel? You were there at the beginning. You're here at the end.
I'm so happy to be here. It's always nice to spend time with the two of you, but on such a momentous episode, especially. Congratulations to both of you. Congratulations to all of you listeners for getting to come along on this journey with Jenny and Helen.
And congratulations on getting reelected so many times in the sheriff elections.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. Thank you. I mean, eventually tax codes are going to change and a police department is going to come in. But for right now, I'm thrilled to remain.
Incorporate this podcast. Yeah.
I just wanted to say, Rishi, thanks so much for having this idea. And setting me up with Helen so that she had to be friends with me, which is truly a blessing in my life. And also, what a true delight to wrap up our proper Veronica Mars coverage. I'm like a Jenny sandwich on bread that is comprised of two of the most beloved and soothing voices in the whole podcast landscape. See, it seems someone's made a mistake, but it's too late to change it now. We're almost done with the episode.
Well, I think 85% of our listenership is just here for the Jenny Owen Young's laugh. That magical sound.
Is it magical? Yes. Or is it...
It's their lifeblood.
It's like when I hear like a fisher cat or a fox screaming outside at night and I'm like, wow, I never... Wow, what a special, terrifying sound.
No, if I were ever to make a music box that I would leave to my daughter for her to resent me with, I would put it to the sound of Jenny's laugh.
That's a very touching tribute.
Oh my fucking God.
Rishi, what line in this episode are you going to tuck away wherever you keep the best lines in each episode of Veronica Mars?
In the tiny pocket of my tiny jacket.
Yeah, it'll never fall out of that.
We discussed it a little bit, but I'm going to actually go with, "Hey, Ronnie," from Logan. Because even though he's actually being a jerk in that moment, when he first says that line, you don't know it yet. And he delivers it with such convincing tenderness that you think there's some kernel of love here between the two of them, maybe, you know, it, just that he's drawing from their past shared history. I don't know. But of course, to me, it sets the stage for so many things that are going to come. And I really love it. Before we lose Ronnie as her moniker to lesser characters, I really love that line as delivered by Logan to the future love of his life.
And I don't think he ever calls her it again.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with one of the few pure things that Weevil says in this episode that it does not require any question marks or raised eyebrows.
It's a zero hog line.
No hogs were present or harmed in the creation of this line. It's when he rolls up next to Veronica outside the Camelot, does the little roll down motion, and then says, "Car trouble, miss," which I love. Because I, like Veronica, would love for Weevil to look under my hood at his leisure.
Wow.
Helen?
I will choose one because of how it's prefiguring how a lot of this series goes. It's Cliff saying, "I'm just going to leave this file here open on your desk, and if you decide to take a look at it, cool." And then how would you rate this episode? Because like I said, I struggle to judge it now, having seen it so much and knowing everything else that happens in the Veronica Mars verse intimately.
I stand by my statement. It's an excellent, excellent pilot, and I think it might be the best episode of the show. So I would give it 10 tall tube socks out of 10.
Well, we rate out of 5, out of five here,
sorry,
Richie.
Sorry,
okay. I suppose that's 5 pairs
five
of socks.
Pairs, yeah, okay.
5 pairs.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
Okay. I would give it 5 pairs of Wallace's tube socks out of 5.
Okay. Wow. Yes. Great.
What about you, Jenny?
What a great episode. Action-packed, as we've discussed. We've met so many things, so many people, so many ideas. The whole world, the whole landscape of the Marsverse is sprawling out in front of us, crooking its finger. This way, onward.
Second time's the charm, Jenny.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. So I'm happy to give this episode like 4.9 correctly laid pipes. And Helen, how do you find it upon this 7th viewing?
You know what? I'm going to give it the same score I gave it on my 5th viewing, which was for our first recapping of this, which was 4.5 out of 5. Although I'm going to change my object to Mars Investigations windows that are actually transparent.
Well, I guess, if you can believe it, that's this episode of Veronica Mars Reinvestigated.
Case reclosed.
That was Veronica Mars Investigations, Season 1, Episode 1, Pilot, The Re-Recappening.
The website where the show lives, along with Backup One, is VMIPod.com. Go there for listings about what we're going to recap next. And we might do some simul watches, so we'll let you know when those are as well.
Mm-hmm. And to keep track of what we're up to, you can join our mailing list at vmipod.com/VMIMail. And you can find the show on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at VMIPod.
Watch Play It Again, Dick, the Dick Casablanca's vehicle, and join us back on the pod mid-October to investigate it.
Yes!
I'm Hrishikesh Hirway. You can check out other podcasts that I work on, including Song Exploder. I also have a new newsletter that I just launched called Accept Cookies. You can find that at hrishikesh.bulletin.com. If you want to see the other stuff that I work on, music and other projects, my website's hrishikesh.co.
I'm Jenny Owen Youngs. I do a number of things. You can hear more of my speaking voice on Buffering the Vampire Slayer, my other pod. You can hear my singing voice on songs recorded and released by me, Jenny Owen Youngs, under my name, and also on songs by my band, LAXs, who just released their debut album. Get some.
It's very good. Earworms every day.
Thanks, Helen. And one other way you can spend time with me is that I stream on Twitch kind of a lot, usually a couple times a week. So you can swing through and hang out with me. Sometimes Helen is there in the chat. It's a very good time. There's songs, there's chat. It's nice. People are really nice in there.
The best place on the internet.
It's a low bar, but thank you so much.
It's pure. I am Helen Zaltzman, and you can hear my other podcast, The Illusionist, which is an entertainment show about how language works. Also, I just did a new live show, which has got music in it and some gadding around. And you can watch a video of that still for the rest of September 2021. You can obtain that at theillusionist.org/events.
Whatever the internet clickery version of run, don't walk is what I would recommend you do with regards to that live show. I watched it happening live. It was awesome. There were so many songs. It blew my friggin' face off.
Whoa.
It ripped so hard.
Left Jenny faceless.
Make sure your faces are firmly secured when you hit play, but definitely watch it. This episode was edited and mixed by Helen Zaltzman. And thanks to Ian Steadman for the transcript.
The music is by Martin Austwick and Jenny Owen Youngs.
The sheriff of this town is me, Hrishikesh Hirway.
Our ad partner is Multitude. To sponsor an episode of the show, contact them at multitude.productions/ads.
For the last time.
Okay.
Who's your daddy?
You are.
Gross. I don't like it. I don't like it anymore.
Okay, okay.
Well, you only have yourself to blame.
Thank you.